Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Press Any Button. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Eric.
And today we're going to be talking about Puzzle Quest, Challenge of the Warlords. But before we get started, I would like to make a little announcement. This is episode 14, and it's going to be the last episode
forever
of the season.
We are never doing this again. Fuck you. Bye.
JK, Eric, you don't need to be so hostile. But no, we're going to take a break off for July, but we should be back in August with season two, and hopefully we'll, you know, have some new good stuff for everybody.
Yeah, and we're starting season two with a special guest,
which we'll talk about a little bit later in the episode.
We don't even want to say who it is, or we just want to leave it a surprise.
Surprise.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Also, while we're taking a break, you know, if you get bored and you want to go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or, you know, just share the podcast with your friends, that would be super awesome.
What is Puzzle Quest?
I'm glad you asked, Eric, because Puzzle Quest, Challenge of the Warlords, is an RPG tile-based puzzle game developed by Infinite Interactive. In a high fantasy setting, the character moves around the game's world and encounters enemies to fight as to gain experience and acquire treasure, as in a typical role-playing game. Combat takes place on a board similar to Bejeweled, and by making matches of colored gems, you can cause damage to your opponents, cast spells, or perform other abilities that affect the flow of the game.
Nice. Sounds like a great game.
Ooh, it is a great game. And I'm excited to learn about it.
All right, let's get into it.
Woo!
Okay, Nikki, are you ready to learn about the history of Puzzle Quest, Challenge of the Warlords?
I'm stoked.
You're stoked.
I'm pumped. Let's get it.
All right. So Infinite Interactive, the company that developed Puzzle Quest, was founded by an Australian named Steve Faulkner. And Faulkner is the person who came up with the idea for Puzzle Quest. So I'm going to kind of focus a lot of this on Steve Faulkner.
Okay. It's a very cool name.
Yeah.
Steve. Sounds like established, you know.
It's fun to say.
It is. Steve Faulkner.
So Faulkner made his first game in 1983.
Whoa.
When he was still a teenager, called Quest for the Holy Grail.
Nice.
Not the Mighty Python movie, but, you know, just his own game. He didn't know anything about publishing games at the time, so he would go to gaming conventions and hand out the game for free in Ziploc bags. He put a message in the end credits that says if they wanted the next game to mail him $5. He said he received 32 checks, earning him $160, which he mostly spent on pizza and beer.
Dang. That's funny. He was hustling.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, the musicians that are on the streets and, like, well, back in the day before Spotify and stuff, you know, they would have their demo CDs and stuff and they would just hand it out for free.
Yeah. Well,
or try to sell it to you for $5 or something like that.
Well, you think about, like, pre-internet era in 1983, like, if you made a really cool game, how would you get it out there? How would you show people? And you just want people to play it.
I guess word of mouth would be really the only way. I mean, unless you, like, were rich and could do a commercial or something, you know?
Yeah.
Which obviously did not sound like he had the means for that, but it seemed like a really cool idea. Do you not think $160 was enough to put into making another game, or was he just kind of like
he was doing it
lazy and wanted pizza?
he wasn't lazy, because, you know, as a teenager he's making video games in his spare time.
Well, I know, but he said send $5 for the next game. And he just spent it on pizza, not on making the next
game. Well, he would make the next game. Like, he didn't just make the one game. He would continue to make these games.
Okay.
In fact, he would keep making and giving away games until 1989. When he made a game he thought was just too good to give away.
Oh, is that Puzzle Quest?
No, it was a high fantasy RPG called Warlords.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Is it coming together?
Yeah. So he sent an incomplete version of his game to a bunch of developers and publishers, not knowing the difference.
And solid idea.
Yeah, and everyone told him no, except for one company called SSG, or Strategic Studies Group.
That's awesome. He shooted his shot. He shot his shot. He went for it.
Yeah,
you know, whatever that saying is. He went for it, and it sounds like it paid off. You know, like anytime that you're trying to get yourself out there, you're gonna have a lot of people tell you no, but all you need is the one person to say yes.
Yeah, and this was literally the last company he tried, and they didn't get back to him until like 6 weeks after he sent the game.
But hey, they got back to him, so yeah. That's cool.
So Warlords ended up doing well enough that Faulkner would develop 3 more Warlords games with SSG and a spinoff series called Warlords Battle Cry before leaving and founding his own company in 2003, Infinite Interactive.
Whoa, that's cool. Did you say Warlords was an RPG, or was it a puzzle, or what?
It was a high fantasy RPG.
Okay, cool.
I've never played any of these games. Have you ever played any of the Warlords games?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, they might have been a little before our time.
But it sounds like a really cool story. Someone that kind of started from nothing and worked their way all the way up to having their own company.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. So like many great minds, Faulkner would show up to work late around
like someone I know
around 11 a.m.
That's sending across. You would go in at 11 a.m. if they would let you, probably.
Yeah, that's a good time to go in, I think. And then once at work, Faulkner said he would start his day by playing a few games of Bejeweled to get his brain going.
Nice. I could see that, you know, get your brain muscles warmed up. I mean, when you're the owner of a company, you really can just can do whatever you want. It's your money.
Yeah. When I'm playing Bejeweled at work, I'm goofing off, but when Faulkner does it, he's getting his brain going.
Yeah.
So he said he'd start off like playing one game, and then pretty soon he would do like 2 games and then 3 games. And then there was one day where he pretty much played the game all day until like 4 in the morning.
Dude, Bejeweled is addictive. I've played that game, and yeah, I really like it. It's, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's the same as like Candy Crush and some other stuff like that. But I don't know. I like puzzle games, and so Bejeweled was a really well-made one, and obviously, like, he got addicted to it too.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing this is what inspired him to make Puzzle Quest.
Yeah. So like he decided that his addiction wasn't going to end until he pretty much programmed a similar game to Bejeweled. So once he had the Bejeweled clone programmed, it was pretty much just smooshing together RPG elements that, you know, kind of inspired by his previous games, also inspired by Magic the Gathering. Which it seems a lot of games are inspired by Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
And the story inspired by Final Fantasy Tactics.
Cool. Yeah, you can definitely see the path.
Yeah.
You know?
Like yeah.
The path that eventually ended up in Puzzle Quest.
Yeah. From, yeah, making high fantasy RPGs to, yeah, combining it with Bejeweled, which he was addicted to. Yeah, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and if you play the game, yeah, it's like, okay.
That's really...
You could probably have guessed that, honestly.
So Puzzle Quest Challenge of the Warlords released in 2007 on Nintendo DS, PSP, Windows, Xbox Arcade, PlayStation 2, Wii, and in 2008 on PlayStation 3, iOS, Android, and in 2019 on Switch.
So dang.
It's been on a lot of things.
Yeah. Kind of like Plants vs. Zombies in that aspect. Like, you can pretty much play it no matter what equipment you have.
Yeah.
Even if you just have a phone.
On any device, pretty much, yeah. So Puzzle Quest ended up being an unexpected hit. Initially, not enough copies were published for the Nintendo DS.
Uh-oh.
And the game was sold out for months.
But isn't that kind of good? Because that makes people
want it even more.
Yeah. It's like, ooh, this is like limited. It's rare. Not everyone can have it. Like, I'm special if I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a great game. It really worked well on the DS2 because of the stylus controls.
Yeah. I can see that, like, just being able to move the jewels with, like, the pin or whatever instead of using the D-pad.
Exactly. So, do you want to hear some fun facts?
Of course. What kind of question is that, Eric?
So, I just have the two fun facts.
Oh, that's, like, not very many. Okay. They better be good.
I think they're pretty good fun facts. Okay, so fun fact number one. Steve Faulkner learned how to program when his friend bet him $20 that he couldn't code the D&D combat rules in less than 1 kilobyte of memory. Faulkner claims that his friend still owes him the $20.
I need to hear what his friend has to say.
I just love
making... We need to hear both sides.
I just love the idea of making that bet before you even know how to program.
Well, I imagine back then he was like a cocky teenager and he was just like, thought he could do everything and... it kind of sounds like he did it, so
yeah.
He wasn't wrong, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's kind of cool. And then I guess that kind of sparked his love for making video games.
Yeah, you can kind of see the D&D inspiration, and at least Puzzle Quest, and I'm sure in his other games as well.
Mm-hmm.
So fun fact number two, SSG, the company who helped him develop and publish Warlords, initially threw the game away since it didn't match the theme of the games they were publishing, which were military strategic games. The co-founder's kid literally dug the game out of the trash and started playing it, and that's when they decided to help develop and publish it.
Oh, so originally they weren't going to publish it, and that's why it took so many weeks to get back to him, because they threw it away.
Yeah.
He owes the son a little bit of something.
Yeah, he says he definitely owes... I think his name was Alex. He said he definitely owes Alex a debt of gratitude.
Yeah, that's cool. I wonder if the son just played it a little bit and then was like, where'd this go? And then found it in the trash, you know? Or if he was just like being a random little kid and looking through the trash and found it and started playing it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. Maybe there was some cool, like, kind of art that went with it or something, and he saw it in the trash. Is like, ooh, what's that?
Maybe.
Or a disc. You know, I remember being a kid and wanted to see what was on, like, every disc and CD and all that stuff. Just curiosity.
That's cool. I would like to hear that story from his perspective or whatever of, like, why he ended up finding it in the trash.
Yeah.
That'd be cool to know. I kind of have a fun fact,
ooh,
but I don't know if you were going to talk about it yet or not.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, when I was on the website for the game, there was also a Magic: The Gathering puzzle quest.
Yeah, I think there are a bunch of different spinoffs of puzzle quests. I think there was like Avengers puzzle quest. There's
a Marvel one, I think.
Oh, maybe it was the Marvel one that I was thinking of.
Yeah, Marvel Avengers. Whatever.
I think there was either like a Digimon or some kind of other franchise that had a puzzle quest game. Maybe, I don't think it was Digimon. I think it was something else.
But that's kind of cool that it kind of branched off. I definitely could see this format working really well with the Marvel one, just because there's so many different storylines in the Marvel universe. Like, yeah. I could definitely see this format of the game working for that. And from what I saw, that game is pretty popular, so
okay.
I think it has, like, taken off.
Maybe I'll try giving it a spin sometime.
Ooh.
All right, so what did you think about Puzzle Quest? What were some of the pros that you liked about it?
Okay, I'm going to say this was not my favorite game. I'm probably not going to keep playing it very much. I don't know, it's just... I'm not sure. Something about it just didn't, like, flow as good for me. But anyways, I'll start with the things I did like about it. I like that it's a creative mashup of the two different genres. I think it's pretty cool. And if I'm not mistaken, the first of its kind to take, like, puzzle and RPG and do a mashup game.
Yeah, the first one I ever heard of to do that.
So it kind of invented its own genre. Which is neat.
Yeah, definitely. And the RPG elements, I feel, do add a lot to the progression of the game, like gaining levels and learning new spells and fighting new items all affect the way you play the game and how you set up your strategy. Like, you know, if your spells are more heavily like in the yellow mana, you're going to try to emphasize collecting yellow mana over, you know, some other actions on the board.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, and I like that you're able to build your character like you do in D&D. You get experience points that you can put towards leveling up your different characteristics. And I also like that other things can affect your character too, like building your citadel out opens up other things that your character can do too. For example, like once you build your dungeon, that allows you to capture your enemies instead of fighting all of them.
Yeah.
So that also unlocks like a mini game sort of, because when you capture your enemies, it's not the same puzzle play as battling. So
yeah, and then cool. Once they're captured, you can unlock another mini game, which is learning abilities from the captured enemies, which what? Is cool too. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's yeah, if cool.
You go, if you go back to your citadel, to your mage tower, uh-huh. or I forget where.
Okay, that's cool. I haven't done that yet. But yeah, it's kind of cool how you get, like, each player can kind of make their character different according to whatever you prefer, you know, like, skill-wise
yeah.
and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's, like, 8 or 10 classes or something mm-hmm. you can choose from at the beginning. So I know for you, you said you weren't a huge fan of this game, but for me, this is my, like, favorite Bejeweled-style game.
Really?
Yeah, I love this game.
Huh.
I mean, at this point, it's not nearly as unique as it was when it came out,
mm-hmm.
just because the market of Bejeweled-style games wasn't so completely saturated.
Yeah, like it is now.
Yeah, you have like Candy Crush and...
Best Fiends.
I think Gardenscape. You have so many...
there's a ton of them.
You have so many Bejeweled-style games nowadays. Like, I feel like that whole genre is kind of burnt out a little bit. But I feel like this was the best attempt at a visual style game. I don't know.
I don't know. To me, it's just not a true puzzle game, you know? And that's probably why you like it. But for me, if I'm going to be playing a puzzle game, I just want to play the puzzle. Like, I don't really care about the story so much.
Yeah.
And this one is a lot of story, so.
There is a lot of story here.
I do like all the different enemies and bosses in the game. Which mm-hmm. is kind of cool. It's like they all have their own different spells and their different like powers or things they can block or like whatever. So you, like I guess the puzzle play changes up a little bit due to the variety of enemies you have.
Yeah, like that that wood golem. That's like one of the first really tough enemies, where if you cast spells, then he will gain levels basically.
Yeah.
So the more spells you cast, the more hit points and battle damage and like extra turns potential he can get by matching gems, all that stuff. And it makes it really tough if you don't go and read kind of the subtext.
Yeah. Because at first you're just like playing him like normal, like if you don't go and read his stuff. Yeah. And then you're like, what the heck? Why is every time I cast a spell, he gets more health?
More
like,
hit points.
This isn't cool. And so, yeah, you basically just have to play him by not using anything special. Like, just playing it straight up.
Yeah, exactly.
Another thing I like is that before you start your battles, you can pick if you want to do easy, normal, or hard. And it doesn't make you choose the same level for, like, the whole game. You know, like, other games, you just pick at the beginning what you want to do. And so, like, every battle is going to be easy, normal, or hard. But for this, you can change it up if you want. If you feel like you want to try something a little bit harder, you can do that per match.
You know? If you're struggling with a particular enemy, you can change the setting down to easy. You won't get as much experience in gold, but if he's, like, if the enemy is kind of blocking you from progressing in the game, it's really helpful so you don't get overly frustrated.
Yeah. Or like me, and you were playing everything on easy anyways, but you thought that one was a little too easy, you could go in and play it normal or like whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Like if it's an enemy I've already beaten a bunch of times and I know it's not hard, I might bump up the difficulty just to get a little bit more experience in gold.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the things I liked is that there is a ton to do in this game. There's, of course, all the quest stuff, which usually involves battling enemies. You can also capture enemies and mounts to gain additional spells. You can siege cities. You can train mounts you capture. You can create items. And all of these involve different variation of tile matching games. So it's...
Yeah.
There's just so much in this game.
That's funny that you have that as a pro, because, like, do you have any more pros you want to talk about?
I think that's pretty much
it. Okay. Because I have that as a con. I literally have, like, there's a lot to learn in this game. You've got skills. You've got different enemies with different skills. You've got the story that is really detailed. You've got taverns, shops, all kinds of things you can visit. Ugh, you've got so many different quests.
I love that.
I don't know. You've got your skills that you have to apply. You eventually get like a companion. Like, there's just a lot going on in this game.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I guess like that's probably why, you know, you put that as a pro because, like, I think because you're more of like a hardcore gamer, that stuff's a pro to you. And although I'm a gamer too, not as hardcore as you. I don't know. I think when I want to play a puzzle game, like, I don't know, it's a lot of extra stuff.
Yeah, you think it needs to be simplified.
I think this is a game more for if you want to play an RPG game, but with a little bit of a twist. But if you want to play a puzzle game, like if you're craving a puzzle game, I wouldn't pick this one. Huh. Does that make sense?
I guess. You can also play this pretty casual. You can ignore a lot of this extra stuff.
Yeah.
And just play it as kind of a bejeweled, well,
but even if you do that, there's still a lot of extra
still
things.
Yeah, there's still the battles and spells.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know,
there's a lot of not puzzle time in the game. Which I feel like if you want a puzzle game, you just want to play the puzzle.
I don't know,
itself.
you can skip a lot of the story though, honestly. This is one of my cons, like the story isn't super compelling to draw you in. It's not bad, it's just not, to me, it doesn't take enough creative license. Like, it comes across very much as a very typical fantasy story.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really try to do anything outside of the box, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't really like how detailed the story was either. I feel like they could have just simplified it and made it so that if you did want to read it all, it wouldn't take you forever. Because there's just a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, there's dialogue, and I find myself... Personally, I would just hit the start button and skip it and go straight into the bejeweled part.
Yeah, same. Which I kind of feel guilty about, but then I also don't feel guilty about, you know?
Yeah. I'd occasionally like go and like read a cutscene and just not know what was going on. But
yeah. But I think you should play games however you want to play them. Don't feel guilty because you want to skip the story.
Yeah. Well, if the story...
If that's not what's fun for you, yeah, you know?
Again, I don't feel like the story is really trying to do that much, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Another thing, and this kind of goes along with everything else, is the game is really long.
Yeah, it's an RPG.
We've been playing it for over a week now, and I don't even think I'm anywhere close to being done with this story or with the game.
Yeah, it goes in with there's a ton to do in this game.
Yeah. Which, I mean, a lot of puzzle games are kind of like never ending in a way. Like Candy Crush and stuff, there's just like pretty much infinite amounts of levels. So I guess that's kind of normal, but I don't know.
You could either view it as a positive or a negative. A negative if you're like, oh man, I just want to beat this game and get it over with. Or a positive, it's like, oh man, I hope this game never ends. I want to keep playing this all the time.
Yeah, I think I'm the first option. What's something else that you don't really like about the game?
Even though there is a lot going on, I feel like the overworld map can get a little bit too cluttered, which makes the game a little bit too inconvenient, I feel like, for a smartphone or tablet. It's kind of a shame since the combat works so well on a smartphone or a tablet, but there is a lot. Like, you have the quests on the side where you can go over there to see where you need to go and cancel a quest if you need to. You have like about 10 different screens from like your level to what spells you currently are taking into battle with you to what items you're currently taking into battle with you to, you know. It's just a ton of different like kind of like screens and sub screens And it can all get a little bit too cluttered, I feel like.
Yeah. Very involved game. The music in the game is not very good. Sorry, people who made the music for this game, but it's just kind of repetitive. It's not very unique sounding. It doesn't really change very much, like, according to when you're fighting, like, a boss or anything. So I found myself just putting it on mute a lot and then playing my own music while I was playing the puzzles.
The music can get repetitive, but I do think it fits very well with the high fantasy kind of theme it's got going on. Like, if you were to play, like, a session of Dungeons & Dragons or something with some friends, I can totally picture having something similar to the music playing in Puzzle Quest, like, on in the background.
Yeah, but you're talking with your friends and, like, playing role-playing and stuff in D&D, so you don't want something super, like, distracting.
Yeah.
But when you're playing this game, you're not talking to anyone or anything, so, like, I feel like the music could be a little more adventurous.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I do have that as a con too. I think it is a little bit too repetitive, but I do feel like it matches the game pretty well.
Yeah. I have one more con.
Okay.
Do you have any more?
No, I got them all.
There are rats in this game. You know, I'm sick and tired of games having rats. Like, can we get more creative, people? Like, rats are gross. They're scary and creepy, and I don't like them. And I don't want to play any more games with rats. So hopefully, whatever game we have to do next, it's not like Rat Killer 5 or something. I'm going to be so pissed.
that's one of the less creative enemies you can throw into a game. You have bats, you have rats. There are just so many kind of boring enemies that you kind of see in every single game that it's like, can you come up with something else a little bit more creative where I'm not fighting, like, bats and rats? Like,
especially rats. It's like, I'm over it.
Okay, so what kind of strategy did you use when you were playing this game? Like, what was your general strategy? Like, did you prioritize any gems over any other gems?
General strategy was to look at my spells and see which ones... you know, which ones needed which color gems. And then at first, you always kind of want to build up, or at least I would always try to build up a bank of all of my colored gems. That way, once I kind of got it built up, I could just use spell after spell after spell if I wanted to.
Yeah, that's a pretty good strategy. So, of course, there are the four types of gems. So there's there's blue, yellow, green, and red gems.
Yeah.
And there's also experience stars, which just add experience points. There's gold coins, which add gold coins. And then there's skulls, which do immediate damage to your opponent.
Yeah.
So obviously, usually you prioritize matching skulls because if you don't match the skulls for one, then they're going to match the skulls and do damage to you.
Exactly.
And then next is probably building up your mana. And then you also, probably the lowest tier is gathering gold and experience.
Yeah. Except for me, because since my challenge was to get all the things in my citadel.
Yeah.
You know, I would actually go for coins a little bit more just because I was trying to buy all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it costs money, or costs gold. And also, if you get 4 in a row instead of 3 in a row, you get an extra turn.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you see a 4 in a row option, you would want to do that before anything else, as long as it didn't mess up your next move, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes even if it did mess up your next move, because you might create a chain or something.
Yeah, true.
It seemed like to me it was almost always a good idea just to go for the 4 match or 5 match.
Yeah. I'm just saying, unless you have an option to get 3 skulls in a row, you might would want to do that over the 4 of a kind if the 4 of a kind was going to mess up you getting the 3 skulls, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Just because you want to prioritize the damage over the extra turn. Yeah,
actually murdering your opponent over just gathering things.
Yeah, and sometimes the opponents get really hard, like we were saying earlier. The one boss where you can't use any spells against him, pretty much, like, that's pretty hard. You have to have a different strategy for that.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously there, it really doesn't matter if you gather your your colored gems because, like, you can't use your spells anyway. Yeah. But then there's other bosses, you know, that have different spells or can block certain spells. So, you know, you would want to use different strategies for those.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I found was helpful is that if there was only, like, one move and it was to set up, like, an opponent getting skulls basically on me, I would elect to cast a spell or something that would take up a turn. You try to at least look and make sure you weren't setting up skulls for your opponents.
Yeah. You have to think a few turns in advance or whatever. Or at least one turn in advance.
Yeah, I was only one. I'm only good enough to think one turn in advance.
Well, but you don't know what's going to happen. So, like, if you haven't played this game, you know, you take a turn and then your opponent takes a turn on the puzzle.
Yeah, that might be good to mention that.
Yeah.
If you wait for a few minutes, then the game will give you a little hint. Like, it'll show you where a match is. Those hints aren't always great moves, but if there's, like, a four on the board, it will always show you that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think there might be a good move on the board, like you have a lot of the same color gems and you can't quite find where it's at, sometimes it's good just to wait, like, an extra few seconds for the hint to show up.
Yeah, true. Although I don't like to take the hints. I'm like, oh, I don't need you.
I think you can turn it off if it really does bother you, but it's never bothered me.
Nah, it's pretty subtle, too. It's not, like, really flashy or anything. So if you do want to ignore it, it's not, like, that hard.
Yeah. And like I said, those hints aren't always good moves. So it's usually, even if it's giving you a hint, it's still good to kind of look around the board and see what else. Because it might not be for, like, the color mana you need, or it might end up setting up an opponent.
Yeah,
so
true.
And also, I found that for tougher enemies, it's good to sometimes read what items and skills they have and they can do.
Well, yeah.
Usually, my default is just to fight the thing and not worry about it.
Yeah.
But then if they end up being a tough opponent where, you know, I have to spend an extra life or two trying to find...
Or you try to cast spells and they don't work.
Yeah, like, or all of a sudden they keep gaining all this HP. I'm like, what the heck? What's going on?
Yeah.
Then I'll go and I'll read and I'll see how are they doing it.
Yeah, I'm the same way too. I just go in and try to fight it like normal. And then if that doesn't work, I'll go and actually read their spells and stuff.
Yeah, that's the lazy approach.
Yeah.
So do you have any other strategies that you've thought were helpful?
No, not really.
Okay.
You know my stance on strategies.
All right. So what about the future? What's happening with the future of Puzzle Quest?
I really couldn't find that much. I found that they're working on a Puzzle Quest 3.
Yes.
But from what I could find, I don't think it's out yet, is it?
Yeah, it's scheduled to be released in 2021, and this will be the first mainline Puzzle Quest game since 2010.
Dang, 11 years.
Yeah, which that's pretty exciting.
That's because they've been doing all those side Puzzle Quest games, I guess.
Yeah. This isn't quite the future. This was this year, so it's kind of futurist.
Future-ish.
So in January, Infinity Plus 2, which is what Infinite Interactive has changed their name to, was bought by 505 Games. The CEO of 505 Games, Clyde Roberts, said that Steve Faulkner would still continue to lead Infinity Plus 2.
Okay.
That side of the company.
Cool.
So it was bought by 505 Games.
And do they have any games I would know of?
I did not bother to look up and see what games they make. I think they were one of the reasons they bought Infinity Plus 2 was to kind of enter the free-to-play market, because I don't think they had made any free-to-play games up to that point, whereas Infinity Plus, I think all the Puzzle Quest games have become free-to-play pretty much, with the exception of this first one.
Yeah. Dang. 505 Games has a ton of games. Like, a lot. Like, at least, looks like at least 50. So I'll just, like, say some of them. Battle Ages, Drift 21, Naughty Bear. Oh, Naughty Bear! That's awesome! I have a story about Naughty Bear. I bought it because I played it back in the day, but totally did not look to see if what is it, like, retro
compatible, like,
I didn't look to see if it was retro compatible for our Xbox, and so I bought it and now I can't play it because we don't have an Xbox 360 anymore. But that's cool that they do Naughty Bear. Let's see, Stardew Valley. That's a good one. Yeah, I know you like that. Wicked, Underworld, Ascendant. Yeah, they have like a ton of games.
Yeah, so. Sounds like they've made some pretty good games.
Yeah. Sounds like a good move probably for them to like let them buy them because like they looks like they know what they're doing. So.
Cool. Yeah, I hope that continues working out for those companies.
Yeah.
So did you manage to complete your Citadel?
I did.
So you bought all the buildings.
All decked out. I bought all the things. And I even kept going a little bit after.
Nice.
Although I probably would give this game 5 out of 10 stars.
Okay. So not great.
Not my favorite. It's not taking like the spot of Tetris or like or Best Fiends or anything.
Yeah.
Which is the puzzle game I'm playing right now.
Okay. So you're into another Bejeweled game. So maybe you're Bejeweled out.
I don't know. I like puzzle games, so.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just I didn't really like the mixture of the two genres. I mean, I like it, but I don't know if it's for me. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fair. So you completed your Citadel, so you do not have to wrap this week.
But hey, what would you rate it? Well, how many stars would you give it?
I would give it probably 8 or 9 out of 10.
Dang.
I think it's a great game.
That's high. Yeah. Cool. So, sorry, what were you saying?
So you do not have to wrap this week.
I don't have to wrap, but I kind of want to wrap.
You do?
Yeah. So here's what I was thinking. Since it's our last episode of the season, I think we should do a recap wrap or a wrap where we just highlight our favorite things that happened during the season.
Okay,
does that sound cool?
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Awesome.
Okay, yeah, so let's hear it.
All right.
Now, Hatto's game got me checking out birds, and I don't know if that's being absurd, but my subjects are blurred, the fruit never lured, a mirror concurred that my photos are a turd. The plumbers are dying, and Nintendo ain't lying, and smiling while filing, 35 aligning, coffins imbued with tiny colored hearts, subdued by bubbles from an underwater fart.
Alright, it's the end of season one, we really gone and done, had a lot of fun, chit-chat about a bunch of games, some top notch and some were lames. Fog got stumped, Eric first, then came Hades and Nikki was cursed, but Home Alone 2's gotta be the worst. Dive into next season, head first.
Wow, that was so good.
Oh my gosh. That was really fun. And I hope everyone enjoyed it, enjoyed the first season. So we have something fun set up for episode 1 of season 2, or I guess it'll just be episode 15, but the first episode of season 2, we're gonna have a special guest.
Yep, we're gonna have our friend Mark Spurlock on, who's been doing pretty much all of our music.
Yeah, so if you're like, hey, that name sounds familiar, it's probably because you see him in our show notes every week. He wrote our theme song, and like 90% of the raps that we've had, he's donated the rap beats for us. So yeah, he's our friend. He's also a gamer and he's awesome. He's a really good rapper too.
Yeah, so. really good friend.
Yeah.
All right. So are you ready to hear, well, do you want to guess first what kind of game he would pick?
So, okay. I know Mark plays a bunch of different kinds of games like us. So I don't necessarily think it would be a retro game, but it could be. I know he loves Dr. Mario, one of his top games.
Yeah.
But didn't he mention...
He mentioned Metal Gear Solid 2.
Metal Gear Solid 2. I've never played that game, so like maybe he would pick one of those games.
It's a really good one. I don't know. My guess is he's picked something totally out of left field that we would never guess.
All right.
Because that's kind of his personality to do that.
That's very true. So we have a top secret email from him that we need to read, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you got it pulled up?
Yeah. All right. So are you ready? I'm about to click it.
I'm ready to be shocked and amazed.
And click.
Oh, shit. Ba-bum-bum.
So he sent me some filler text so it didn't show up in the preview, which
was
nice.
Very smart.
So, game Metal Gear Solid 2.
Nice.
Challenge.
Called it, sort of.
beat it on normal difficulty and come out with some notion of what the plot was.
Oh no. Okay.
The second part, that's I like the extra added bit.
So is this a game known for having a confusing storyline or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it goes a little bit nuts towards the end.
Is it going to matter that I haven't played the first one?
I didn't play the first one before playing this game.
Okay.
I did enjoy this game without having played the first one, so yeah.
Oh, wait, you've already played this game before?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you already know the story then?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you beat it on regular or did you do hard?
I beat it on normal difficulty.
Okay.
I actually.
So you pretty much already did the challenge. You don't even need to play.
No, I'll do it again. I have the game up on the shelf, actually, in the house, so we have this game already.
Okay. So, can you give me, like, a little bit of a hint as to, like, what kind of game it is?
It's a stealth action game.
Oh, God. Anything where I have to be stealthy is usually not a good thing.
Oh, wait. But he has a but also thing on here, too.
Oh.
He says, if you haven't played the original Metal Gear Solid, you really, really ought to play that first. Make use of that season break, exclamation point.
Oh, okay. So you say that that I don't really need to play the first one, but Mark says we probably do need to play the first one.
Yeah, it might be good to go back because I never played the original, so I only ever played the second one.
Yeah. Do you know if we can get this on Switch or Xbox or like what? I mean, I know we have the disc, but
we'll figure it out
for the first one.
We'll work it out. I'll probably there are some other PlayStation 2 games I want to eventually do. So if I pick up a PlayStation 2, I'll probably just pick one up.
Just add to our console collection.
Eventually,
we don't have enough.
Eventually, I will have all of them.
When we're pretty close, so. Oh my gosh, I'm excited! This is a game I've never played before, and I think it's going to be fun to have Mark on for sure.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to hear the past section that's about the game. I know just the plot is kind of out there.
All right. So that was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm super excited, and we'll just see everybody in about a month.
Yeah, sounds good. See you in a month.
All right, bye.
Bye.
As always, if you like what you heard, please follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, interact with us on social media, and leave us a little review. Like I mentioned earlier, it really helps with Apple Podcasts and getting people to see our podcast. So if you have a spare moment, please go ahead and do that. And thank you for listening. See you next time.